So.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com. While you're at those websites, check out our RSS feed and our email newsletter. Yes, that's right. We can deliver everything straight to your inbox. So go to LouisvillePolitics.com and sign up today. In the meantime, for you guys that are new to the show, the number to call is 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. And as always, for you guys in the listening queue, and there's always a bunch of it, we appreciate it. Just hit that number one on your dial pad and we'll get you on air as soon as possible. And finally, if you'd like to jump in the chat room and start a live chat or get involved in the chat, you can sign in using Facebook and the Twitter. So you can get involved in many, many ways to get your voice known. In the meantime, how are you, Mr. Martin?
All right, Mr. Springsteen. Worn out.
Man, I tell you, you know, I've been running like a banshee all weekend. I actually didn't involve myself in any derby festivities. It was really a working weekend all weekend, trying to get some things taken care of with all these new ventures we've got going on. So, man, it's hot out there. I hadn't spent a lot of time outside in the last couple of months with my medical situation, but I imagine you are wore out working at warehouse today.
Well, yeah, that and just, you know, sometimes the weekends themselves represent not more work, but a different kind of work. And, you know, at my advanced age, that takes a toll on you. When you're used to doing one thing and then mm-hmm. you spend the weekend lifting up, working underneath a bush hole, trying to get all put together, and then lawnmowers, and then yard work.
I hear you, man. I tell you, we're having some problems with your feed.
By the time Monday rolls around, fairly well ready to get back to work so I can get into a routine and stop beating myself up.
I hear you, brother. Hey, listen, I think you're in a bad spot. You're cutting out just a little bit, just so you know in advance. We can hear you.
Damn it.
We can hear you.
Plenty of bars. What's the matter with you?
Well, actually, you sounded good there. So I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I hear you, man. It's always busy. I tell you, from what I understand, this Derby thing is a big deal in Louisville. You know, from what I'm being told, this Derby event is once a year, and it means something to some people. So for those who don't know yet, and I'm kind of tongue-in-cheek with that, folks, I'm a huge Derby fan, born and raised here. But for those who don't know or haven't seen or forgot to check your tickets before you left the track, California Chrome, yes, California Chrome, ended up winning the Derby with jockey Victor Espinoza. Victor is actually, I think he was 51 years old. It's pretty incredible. But anyway, Victor Espinoza rode California Chrome to victory. California Bred did win. You had Commanding Curve in second and Danza in third. And I tell you, I got my trifecta. I didn't get paid for it, though. My trifecta came in second, third, and fourth. I actually threw California Chrome out. And after the Derby, I still think I made the right decision. 203.66 was the winning time. That's slow. And I didn't see any speed in this horse. I don't know how much attention you paid to handicapping or anything else, or even paid attention to the Derby, but that's a slow Derby time. I wasn't impressed whatsoever.
No, I have to be honest. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually, you know, every year, everybody in Kentucky wants to know what everybody else in Kentucky is betting. And like I said, I have managed, if I bet on a horse, it's pretty much a death sentence. It's get the horse ready for the dog food factory. I like California Chrome. The minute they offloaded him off the trailer, I thought, ooh, that's a good-looking horse. You know, he looks like a cool customer. And I thought, you know, yeah, I think I'd go California Chrome. But I didn't put any money on it. So, he wins. You know? I think
But, you know, that's the thing, though. Those horses at that level, you know, most of them are very, very pretty. And California Chrome is no exception. It's just when you start getting into handicapping and looking at speed times and all the different things, track, you know, everything just – this horse looks slow. And this horse was won the Derby in 203.66. And to my mind, he was slow. You know, they think this horse can actually get a chance at the Triple Crown. And quite honestly, you know, it's very possible because usually when a horse runs that slow in a shorter race, they're bred for distance. So I can see, you know, California Chrome maybe getting a shot at the Belmont. But this Preakness deal, if they had a couple of speed horses in there, there ain't going to be a Triple Crown. So it's going to be interesting to see if it pulls it off or not. And, of course, if they do get a Triple Crown, it will be the first time a California bred has ever won it. So it will be interesting to see what happens since the last Triple Crown winner was affirmed in 1978. So I'm curious to see how that works out.
Well, I would at least say that, you know, he ran as much race as he needed to win. So he may have a little more there, but wisely so. When you're running a Triple Crown with 2 week intervals in between it, you don't burn your horse up in the first race. So he did enough to win it. Does he have more? And, you know, that remains to be seen whether he's got more speed or more endurance because he's got two races that will settle it soon enough. But, you know, I think, as I said, you know, statisticians, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, whatever, they will cross-reference every obscure thing they can. I thought it was interesting when I saw some people putting up information that, you know, as they go back through, that, you know, the Great Secretariat would have won that race by 18 lengths.
That's very true, though. But Secretary was one of a kind. And, you know, a lot of people look at that and think, well, the horse lost five races in his career, and he did. Secretary did lose five races, you know. But like the race leading up to the Derby, you know, Secretary had lost because he had a tooth abscess that nobody found, you know, an abscess where the bits in there, it was just really killing him. So there's all kinds of things. We can compare horses through time. You can go all the way back to Man of War and everything else. But the bottom line is, you know, from a statistical perspective, this was, to me, a slow Derby. I've been following the Derby for most of my life. I follow horses quite regularly. I love the horses. And I don't know, I just didn't get much of it. But there is another tradition here in Louisville, Kentucky, that has to do with the Derby. And it's interesting because this Derby tradition remained over the weekend. Broadway Cruising. Yep, you guessed it. I saw the story today, actually, because you didn't hear anything about this over the weekend. You know, usually when you have Broadway Cruising in the past, because, you know, they shut it down and everything else. But apparently, Broadway Cruising is happening on Derby Night now, at least it was this past week. So I see this story that some Broadway Cruising was this weekend. And I'm like, wow, that thing's been shut down. You know, what are you talking about Broadway Cruising? So I'm expecting to see this big article talking about how out of hand it was and all this other stuff, but it was not. There was just a couple of hundred cars, you know, local guys basically putting out their cars, a couple of hundred cars. You know, there was a little bit of a traffic jam and a couple of red lights from the cars, but WLKY is trying to sensationalize something and make this into Broadway Cruising, and I just found it funny. I was laughing because of the way they handled that. And, you know, why are they trying to sensationalize something like that that's basically dead and buried? I don't get that. How about you?
I have no idea. You know, I would think if anything else, after all the crap this community's been through, that if they run a story on Broadway Cruising, they should just say, hey, some guys, you know, which
sure.
Guys showed up, they did some cruising, and nothing happened. Maybe
well,
we're back
to
normal, but you know, like I say, if it bleeds, it leads. So, you know, they've got to drop the drama, I guess. I guess so.
You know, I just don't get why they tried to push that story because, you know, when the anchor was doing a live report. You know, he was doing a live report right in the middle, presumably, of just cruising, and there were two cars at the red light. They tried to show live video from, you know, throughout the day and all that stuff. So there's one religious group out there that has a tent up with about 20 chairs. There were four people sitting there. No cars behind them. You know, then they went to one guy who, a guy by the name of Nate Wilson, who cooks and sells barbecue every year on Broadway. You know, and he said that, you know, things have always been out of control in the past, but he hoped to promote safe fun this year. Being a part of a safer Broadway is a good thing because children are able to come out here and walk. So he makes a lot of money selling barbecue every year, and there wasn't anybody there to sell to. I mean, basically,
yeah.
The streets were empty, and they tried to make this up like Broadway Cruising was alive and well and what a great, safe event it was, but there was nobody there, no crowd, no nothing. So the only thing I could imagine is they're trying to act like they're trying to make the world think that the West End is totally safe now with the Derby and stuff, or they're trying to reinforce that when you talk about Broadway Cruising and Derby, it's a negative thing. I just have no idea who thought of that story or why WLKY promoted it, but it was dumb to me.
I didn't see the story, but the only comment I have on that is man. Amazing what $4 a gallon gas will do to a bunch of people moving along at quarter of a mile an hour.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I drive a big old F-150 with a V8 4.6 Triton in it, so I know gas mileage. And you're right. It would have made a difference for me for sure. And moving on, we've got some other things. Going into Derby Week, of course, we had the Oaks on Friday. Untappable won the Oaks. And the Oaks is the second biggest event in order, you know, if you want to look at it. And the Oaks is a huge-ass thing, but it's really funny because when we talk about the Oaks, according to the police, and this is a Wave3.com story, according to the police, the post-Oaks celebrations, which means prior to Derby, this is Friday night, they had over 60 arrests. Of those 60 arrests, 21 were for felony charges. And what was interesting to me is this next sentence in this story. Most arrests took place in the detail areas of West Broadway, Baxter Avenue, and 4th Street Live. Now, most of these felonies were drug offenses and outstanding warrants kind of deal. But there were miraculously 11 arrests at the track on Derby Day. And of course, it involved a couple of scalpers. Well, essentially, think about the statement. Most arrests took place in the detail areas of West Broadway, Baxter Avenue, and 4th Street Live. You point out the fact that these were assigned detail areas to watch out for. West Broadway, 4th Street Live, aren't those the two primary targets for African-American citizens of this city? Aren't those the two things that we have been going crazy about the last few weeks? And we're assigning police there, so of course there was the most arrest in that area. Would you agree?
Well, I would say the West Broadway is probably, you know, and you hate to think of it this way, but it's probably designed as a bit of a gauntlet to keep troublemakers there. And when they're at 4th Street Live, that's where they go through and they scrounge it, you know, they go and they round up any that got through their primary gauntlet. But, you know, 4th Street Live makes perfect sense because, you know, it's Derby weekend. That's where a lot of the visitors, a lot of the premium hotels are. It's where a lot of the people are going to be. And it's where a lot of people are going to be out of control. So 4th Street Live makes perfect sense. The West Broadway, you know, targeted. I mean, without looking at statistics, if there were, in fact, incidences and crime in the past and they were working on historical data, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Well, I just found it interesting that, you know, that this was made up like it was no big deal. But, you know, we pointed out that we had detail areas at West Broadway and we had detail areas at 4th Street Live. And then the following night, Derby night, WLKY does a story about Broadway cruising, acting like it was a big deal, and nobody was there. Nobody was there because they got rousted Friday night to make sure they didn't come back Saturday night. See, that's the connection. That's the connection. And I found that an interesting connection, and I firmly believe that. And you throw 4th Street Live in here. I mean, in my opinion, 4th Street Live is the biggest racist entertainment district that we have in Louisville. I mean, it's the biggest racist place in Louisville, that whole complex. So, you know, for me, you couple these stories together. We had Broadway cruising, and it was safe and fun, and we had 10 vehicles there trying to push it off as hundreds. And then we talk about, you know, but the night before, police arrested 60 people primarily at West Broadway, which is where the Broadway cruising would go on at. So, you know, you put this together, it looks like a target-rich environment for somebody to scream, you know, racial profiling, racist, you know, whatever they want to scream. It's a target-rich environment when you take it as a whole.
Again, I wouldn't go anywhere with it myself until, you know, perhaps if somebody wants to scream that, you know, if somebody wants to get up and say it, well, they can say it, and we'll see. I would suspect that at least in this case, the police force has historical and statistical data that said that's where they needed to be.
Oh, I'm giving the police the benefit of the doubt here. Don't get me wrong, and I'm not screaming racism. I'm just showing a complete way that when you look at the big picture and how media essentially reports things in this town, that's my biggest concern, you know. And you know, this is what keeps those kind of thought patterns alive. It's just, I mean it more as an example than a real world situation. And we do have another story concerning Derby, and I promise we're going to move on. But it's interesting, a group of friends from Anoka, Minnesota, tried to travel right here to the Derby, and they ran into a problem.
That is the weirdest Derby story.
It is. Apparently, a 22-year-old man by the name of Kevin Casserly, who had been missing since November the 11th, was in an RV cargo compartment. This group of friends who had rented the RV to come to Kentucky for the Derby had stopped for gas or at a store parking lot or something, but they had stopped for gas or something. Anyway, and they found this body in a cargo compartment. So needless to say, they got to miss the Derby because they had to stay behind to help police. But, you know, that is one of the weirdest Derby stories I've heard in quite some time. So I wanted to kind of just throw
that out
there.
And you got to think, when I first heard that, I was like, oh, my God. And then you start thinking, wait a minute, November, December, January, February, March, April, all in Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
No wonder they didn't find it. The corpse was literally, and unfortunately for the family, he was probably freeze-dried. He was probably mummified via dehydration and being frozen. It was, they played the 911 call, and the guy flat out admitted it. He says, I swear I thought they were playing a bachelor joke on me. because this doesn't happen. It's like, man.
Well, you know, you think about it.
That one's the weirdest, and of course, whatever. I don't know if you've read about Miley Cyrus and Ron Jeremy.
Well, that was a joke. Well, now you said that, we got to tell people this. That story came from Empire Sports. Empire Sports is a satire site, folks.
Yeah.
It's a satire site. You know, Ron Jeremy and Miley Cyrus did not get into it at Trixie's. Ron Jeremy was actually at Trixie's. He was the MC for the night. He was hosting the Trixie's event that night. Great choice, in my opinion, considering who he is. You know, but Miley Cyrus was not there. They didn't get into it. But this thing has went viral all over Facebook and everywhere else you can think of. And, you know, and there's another story, too. There's another story out there Empire Sports put out. It involves a jockey by the name of James Graham. According to the Empire Sports story, there was a big spill in one of the races at Churchill Downs. Three horses went down and three jockeys were injured. Two jockeys were rushed to the hospital, but James Graham's leg was broken so bad that, you know, they were trying to do something with it before they could transport him. The only person they had on staff was this veterinarian, this doctor of veterinary medicine. So this veterinarian gave him a shot with barbiturates, which is normal for a horse with a broken leg, but supposedly he gave this guy the dose that he would normally give a horse because he didn't know how to break it up, and it killed the jockey. That's another satire story that's out there and going viral. I'm like, I had a friend of mine call me this morning, you're not going to believe they did this, and started telling me about this, and I said, where did the story come from? Empire Sports, and I started laughing, you know, and it's like...
Yeah, it's kind of like The Onion and everything else,
Exactly. It's the sports version of The Onion. You're absolutely right. So I thought it was pretty interesting. We do have one sad story. Friday, Oaks Day, a 4-year-old boy accidentally shot himself in the face and died at Coles Air's Hospital over the weekend. He actually shot himself in the face on April 26th and died on Friday. Apparently, this 4-year-old was in a home. His name is Camarian Posey. Apparently, he was in a home with his mom and two other kids and somehow got a hold of this gun and shot himself in the face. A homicide unit is still investigating, but our hearts go out to that family. And I tell you, I'm very disturbed at the fact that there's an adult in the home with three unsupervised children like that, to where a 4-year-old has easy access to a gun. I'm not calling for gun control because that's not the answer. This is a parent control. This is an adult supervisor control because that's how these things happen. The gun doesn't pull the trigger. How a 4-year-old got it is very disturbing to me, but I wanted to point that story out.
Yes, definitely, because when you think about it, that reeks of irresponsible gun ownership because, you know, sometimes teenagers get hold of guns. Yeah, they're smart, they're crafty, they're normal-sized people. You know, it's hard to hide something from them when all things being the same as an adult or close to an adult. But a 4-year-old is just a tiny little thought-off human being that should, you know, it should be that incredibly easy to put a gun where a 4-year-old can't get to it. You know, it's just not that hard to put it out of sight. It's not that hard to put it in a difficult place because they're small. So, yeah, this is definitely something really messed up when a little bitty 4-year-old can get hold of a gun.
Well, and I agree with you. I mean, anybody that respects a weapon at all, you know, thinks gun safety. And, you know, the first thing you do is, I mean, I know I keep guns in my house. You know, the people in my house are adults. You know, so I don't really find the need to hide them, lock them up, or anything like that because these are adults. You know, and of course, my sons have been trained and everything else, and they respect their weapons. You know, same with the wife. So I don't worry about that so much. However, if we're going to have small children over or something, I immediately put every gun in the gun safe and lock it up. We're not going to have that happen because we think gun safety first, you know, and our children first. And this is the problem with me because I guarantee you, in the next few days, now that Derby's over, you're going to see this big rally cry on behalf of Posey, and we need gun control. The Metro Council is going to go out there. These Democrats, half of them are in an election this year. They're going to go out there and start pushing all this gun control, and it's not gun control. We're not holding the adult supervisors responsible for their inability to care for the people they're supposed to. So, you know, it's not the gun, folks. It's not the gun. It's the people who have them. Maybe that's where we need to start. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break. When we get back, we're going to move into some other things. One of them being, you know, here in Louisville, the FOP president sounded off and about juvenile justice in Louisville being a joke. I totally agree, and we'll talk about that when we get back and explain why. You're listening to the Ed Spricer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop, over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com, 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Numbers 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. And for you guys in the listening queue, just don't forget to hit that number one on your dial pad. You know, Ed, there's always something going on. And one of the biggest things that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, really, involves the West End, involves juveniles. It's been on our radar for a long time. March 22nd here in Louisville, all hell broke loose when you had 200 people, presumably part of the Y&O gang, go out and riot and destroy property and beat people up and things like that. Well, it's interesting because since this story just seems to be there and we continue talking about the youth problem and everything else, well, lo and behold, FOP President Dave Mosler, has finally gotten sick of the police being blamed for all of this stuff and everything else, and he's trying to tell everybody why we're having problems. Rape, assault and battery, these serious crimes, felonies, crimes like that, Louisville teenagers are actually being charged with these crimes, but they're being let out back onto the street in a matter of hours if they are arrested at all. A lot of the times, these so-called kids, these teenagers who are doing out the rapes, assault, and battery, and property damage, most of the time they're not even getting arrested. You know, they're being taken home or sent home, things like that, with a citation. Well, in April, just last month, The governor, Steve Beshear, another Democrat who don't know his butt from a hole, well, we won't go there. But in April, the governor signed sweeping reforms into law that were supposed to keep juveniles out of detention centers for less serious crimes. Now, this is according to our good friends over at Wave3.com. But juvenile justice court judge D. McDonald has tried to tell us that that's something they've been doing in Jefferson County for years. So essentially, the governor is trying to take credit for trying to do something that's already been in place. But what's really, really interesting here is Dave Mishler says we aren't locking up juveniles enough. The FOP president says the problem isn't that we're not working with these kids. The problem is we're not locking them up enough. Because these guys, if they were getting locked up more and we were keeping them in jail and making them pay a price, they wouldn't be doing this stuff. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I view the justice system somewhat with a libertarian view. As always, I think it depends on the crime. I think if they're nonviolent offenses, if they're breaking a curfew or they're, if they get caught with a little bit of weed or something, I don't know that we should be locking them up. However, when you have juveniles or anybody of any age or any gender or ethnicity or anything, they've escalated to a point where they're harming and violating other people's rights, then it's not a matter of, to me, it's almost not a matter of the juvenile justice system. There comes a point that you simply need to get these violent people, you need to protect society from them. Now, I have mixed feelings about locking kids up because, they always say, they go in, they come out worse, or they come out with street creds or whatever, and you're hitting the nitrous button on the cycle of them being a criminal. Maybe, but at some point, it's got to be about something other than a criminal. And, if you're part of a group of kids that beats the hell out of a grandfather down at Riverfront Park, then our government, the law enforcement, you name it, the justice system has an obligation to protect the rest of us by whatever means necessary from that kind of harm. So I think if they're violent, I think the FOP president has got it spot on. If they're violent, they've got to be separated. I mean, if you've got two dogs or two cats or two of anything, and
right. They're
going to tune each other up, there's one of them that's a dog owner. You mean you have a mean person or a mean animal or anything? You separate them from the other animals, not because you're trying to discipline that one, because you don't want that one to tear the other ones up.
Well, and it's really interesting because we've got the videos of surveillance footage from March 22nd. There were at least 200 people estimated to be involved in this terroristic activity, and that's what it was. These people were terrorizing other people. There were more than 20 criminal incidences, including, beating up people, assault and battery. You've got rape. You've got property, all kinds of stuff. And there were only 7 arrests. And according to Dave Mulcher, who's the president of the River City FOP, Lodge 614 here in Louisville, he says that officers are demoralized and frustrated because they really feel right now there's nothing they can do. Now, considering I was harassed by a couple, I've got to say this up front, normally I would be on the side of the officers and everything. And lately I haven't been, but in this particular case, I'll have to agree with Mulcher. And I tell you why, because, he went to the Metro Council Public Safety Committee late March and told the Metro Council Public Safety Committee that juvenile justice system was just a joke. And here's why. There's a data analysis done on 9,468 juvenile arrests since 2011. And according to this analysis, juveniles were processed and released without ever seeing the inside of a jail cell 83% of the time. That included these juvenile teenagers facing charges for rape, felony assault, robbery, prostitution, trafficking drugs near a school, and yes, even having guns on their possession. The 83% that were released, those are the charges that were against a lot of them. So according to Mulcher, you know, there are plenty of juveniles out on the street that have just committed serious crimes, and they're put out on the street right away without ever serving it one second in jail cell anywhere, you know, so they've got the ability to keep on going. Now, you and I both know as kids, if we did something wrong because somebody showed us how to get away with it, and we thought we were going to get away with it, it's normal behavior for a kid to push the boundaries and get away with it. So if you're a kid who lives in a bad neighborhood and you get access to a gun, a cop nails you with that gun and sends you on your merry way, never spending one second in jail because he's not allowed to put you there, you're going to tell every other kid, and then it's a big joke, so everybody's going to get guns. Oh, if you've got one, I've got one. It's the same mentality. It's almost like the, I know this sounds weird, it's almost like keeping up with the Joneses and you know, maybe a video game. I know it sounds stupid to use that analogy, but that's as simple as I can make it. Well, he's got, you know, WWE video game. I should have it too. So you find a way to get it. It's the same thing with all this crap. So the kids right out on the street are teaching other kids that it's okay. You can get away with it because I didn't do any time. You're not going to either. So Moultrie in this particular situation, in my opinion, is absolutely correct. But we've got this damn judge, McDonald, you know, sitting out here trying to justify it. Judge McDonald is on record. Judge McDonald is defending the current system. They said treatment is the priority, not detention. How do you treat somebody running around with a gun and raping people without showing them there's any negative consequences for this negative behavior? I don't get it.
Well, you say, I don't get it. And to me, that's where, you know, it's good. And we've had judges on that have been involved in establishing family court. And I do believe in it definitely trying to reclaim these lost citizens, you know, that have lost their way. I believe in it firmly. I believe in restorative right. But I think the judge is totally mistaken. You know, every taxpaying and law-abiding citizen, I think at some point the judge needs to pull their head out of their butt and say, look, there are multiple missions here. It's not your mission to save this person from themselves, you know, a la Clockwork Orange or something. We're not here to save you from yourself.
Sure.
We're here to protect the, whatever, 99.6 other percent of the population from troublemakers like you, from dysfunctional human beings like you. I'm sorry. You know, and we will put an effort into trying to reform your dumbass. Our first obligation is to protect the vast majority of sometimes defenseless and oftentimes unsuspecting potential victims out there. You know, we pay our tax dollars not to, you know, I don't pay my tax dollars and expect to see the cop cars riding around. I don't look at a cop and think, oh, well, he's out there trying to reform the young criminals. No, he's out there trying to keep the young criminals at a safe distance from me, and them a safe distance from, you know, me a safe distance from them, and them a safe distance from me, because all hell's going to break loose if they come at me. You
know? Right. You're an exception to
it. Like it or not, it is a control mechanism. The justice system, at least at that point, is about societal control. And it's damn it. Control. Look at what the police cars oftentimes say, to protect and serve.
Right.
The justice system. It's not the salvage a wayward human being system. Justice is justice, and protection is protection, and serving is serving. So serve us, protect us from these animals. And, you know, once you get to third base, then you can worry about reforming them. But for right now, keep the hell out of my way.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, in 2011, and this is where the problem is, Judge McDonald is defending this system because in 2011, McDonald went on record and said that the judges and the prosecutors, the head of the Youth Detention Center, and a few other people, they decided together that they were going to reduce the number of juveniles they lock up by making release mandatory, key word here, mandatory for anything but felonies and serious misdemeanors. So since that time, through April the 23rd of this year, 2014, the number of juveniles detained after an arrest was only about 14%. Now, when you put this in play, because since 2011 is when they came up with this plan, there's been 9,468 juvenile arrests. Most, 83% of them were released, without seeing the inside of a jail cell. But of the people that were released, this included these teenagers that were facing charges for rape, felony assault, robbery, prostitution, trafficking drugs, and guns. So you cannot sit here and tell me, Judge McDonald, that, looking at this, that these aren't serious felony charges or at the very least serious misdemeanors. So these are jailable offenses that these kids should be held accountable to. And that's really the disturbing thing for me. Judge McDonald is still going on record as saying that as long as they are monitored with the systems we have in place, very few of them reoffend. That's not exactly true. We know that the recidivism rate is a lot higher than what they want us to know. So is this because Judge McDonald and the other people who are involved in this program just don't want to admit that it's been a dismal failure because they don't want to be saddled with that? Why are we not accepting the truth here? Or are they just that out of touch? As Mulcher went on to say, some juveniles are bad. They're not good kids. They weren't just now turning their life around. They've gotten so far into the criminal culture that something different has to be done. So who's right here? Who's wrong? Is McDonald more worried about their reputation, that they're the ones that put this together, than in actually making sure there's a difference made? I don't know, but it's very disturbing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I say, for me, it's just mindset. I mean, it just gets down to the very basics for me. First things first, protect society from people that would do other members of society harm. Let's get that covered. And that's I think, what the judges, they see these cases come through, and as the political season's upon us, I've a lot of would-be judges talking about that, And like I say, I get that. It's more cost-effective. It's more humane. It's more what we're about as Americans, to try to salvage these people. But first things first, protect my family, And if that means incarceration, very simply, the equation is very simple. They can't do my family harm because they're not free. Then that's what it takes, at least until you get these thugs reeled in. So I'm totally for it. Like I said, I am totally for the reformation. I don't want to spend, an 18-year-old in prison until he's 78, and we're spending $50,000 a year to keep him there and getting nothing for
right.
it. But whatever. I don't want that. I don't want that for the kid. I don't want that for society. But if a kid goes off and does this wilding crap and beats the hell out of people, then, I think he should be locked up for a little while, at least, so at least I have an expectation that, if some kid assaults somebody in my family, that same kid won't be able to beat the crap out of him again the next night.
On. And here's the thing.
I think they also ought to put in a bind kind of system. It's like, I don't care if the kid's, whatever. If he's put in, if you're the victim of this kid, the hell with this, they're a juvenile and seal the records. It's like, no, if you assault somebody, they have a right to know where you are at all times. You lost that privacy with your victims.
Well, see, and I totally agree with that because, I've said for a long time, and you've agreed with this in the past as well, that this fallacy of trying to protect the juvenile, juvenile records are typically sealed, et cetera. So a lot of times, one of these guys who supposedly don't reoffend will show up in court at the age of 17, but because their juvenile records aren't allowed to be used against them, you don't get to see that they've done the same thing 100 times,
And that really is the fallacy. Do you realize what a joke that is?
Oh, it's a big joke.
Seal the records because they're juveniles. A lot of these kids are out bragging about their records. They are free to tell everybody what they did.
Sure.
They're proud of it in some cases, but if you're an officer of the court, or you're an employee of the state, or you're a God-fearing, law-abiding citizen, you don't get to know. But he can build his street creds and tell every one of his thug friends or his thug wannabe friends what he did, and he can embellish the story and be proud of it. But the system can't talk about it. How back-assward is that?
Well, you know, you've got an excellent point, and I tell you something else. Something else that's disturbing. You know, we had a high school girl here just, what, last year? A victim. She was drunk and passed out. She was raped. There were pictures taken of her on a cell phone camera. They were passed around to anybody and everybody. You know, so, and everything else. And it, nobody cared. That wasn't an issue. It was a big deal because a victim spoke out and named her accusers who happened to be, you know, innocent little juveniles as well. That is a thing. You know, she went, I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
That's what I was thinking of, too, is never mind that they went out and told everybody and their brother with photographic evidence of what they did. Oh, but once it became a crime, they didn't want anybody to know their names.
Right.
Like, what the hell? You have no privacy. That's the reason they had that showdown back then anyway. There's no privacy. You did it, and you made it public.
Right, and that's the thing, you know. So we look at this, you know, so the victim's not allowed to talk about it to anybody about it either. So we do everything we can to protect this criminal because they're a juvenile at the expense of their victims and a society at large. And what really makes it even worse is when we look at this criminal justice system, we will spend more time and more dollars trying to prosecute an adult for smoking a joint by choice than to prosecute a gun-toting, drug-dealing, felony rape and assault juvenile. We just let them go home. There is something fundamentally wrong with our justice system and the way we view it right here in Kentucky, and we're not alone. So, you know, for the River City FOP Lodge 614 President Dave Mutchler, we're on your side. Or Mitchell, I'm sorry, we're on your side. It, you know, we will do anything we can to help you. I want to switch gears real quick.
Absolutely. And as a parent of two kids who won't be juveniles too much longer, legally speaking, I've always wanted somebody to explain me the whole closed juvenile record stuff anyway.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you do the crime, then, you know, what? Because you haven't been on the planet long enough, you have some expectation of privacy that you can get away with any damn thing you want? I mean, since when? And since when that if you're 18 in one day, now you've lost it all? It's like, wait, what's this magical number? It's like, no. I guess I'm for, you know, if you get caught doing a misdemeanor or something that's stupid. Maybe spray painting, tagging a building or something. Do something stupid. Just like maybe getting caught with a joint or something. I absolutely don't believe you should have your life ruined over that. But the minute you violate and you harm another person, and many times mentally or physically harm them for life, you're screwed. Mm-hmm. You have no rights to privacy. You have no expectation that not everybody and their brother should be able to know what you did and when you did it.
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I think it's high time we started thinking along that line. You know, do we want to talk about 8-year-olds? No. But I don't see anything anymore. When we have gang-infested middle schools, and those ages in middle school range from 12 to 15, guess what? Anything over 12 is now gang, or it should be, because we know these gangs exist. We know about the YNO. They're not alone. And it's just going to get worse unless we do something. Let's. I want to move on just a little bit. I want to cover a couple of things real quick. I've got to give props to our good friend David Adams. David Adams is basically run a one-man crusade against Governor Steve Beshear and his illegal Kentucky Connect, the Connect program that was a state's version of Obamacare. It's just reported that Obamacare, the Connect portion, the state portion of Obamacare, is dead. We had a vote, 89-11 in the House and 37-1 in the Senate. They killed any funding for the Affordable Care Act. Essentially, in this two-year budget that they put together, the Democratic-controlled House and the Republican-controlled Senate both agreed in an overwhelming majority that we were not going to allow any money from the budget to be used towards Kentucky Connect or anything that has to do with the Affordable Care Act by President Obama. David Adams has been fighting this, telling the whole world that it's illegal. The courts still have not made an official ruling on anything, but at this point, it's really a moot point because it is now defunded. And the reason it was defunded is the governor had every opportunity to use his line item veto for any part of the budget he wanted, and that opportunity expired, and he refused to take any action on it. So that means that this budget now stands, and the governor refused to take any action on it because he knew he was beat. He'd been pushing this and pushing this and telling the whole world that this was going to happen. They even used our program, the Kentucky program, as a model for Obamacare throughout the U.S., and the Democrats who control this state, at least in the House, you know, the Democrats control so much, they're so scared of being labeled to be part of Obamacare in an election year, they caved and defunded it. It was the only way to beat Obamacare is to defund it. So we defunded the Kentucky portion of it. And David Adams, I know you listen to the show every day, you know, and I appreciate the heck out of it. But, you know, pal, you know, this one's for you. David Adams was labeled everything in the book. David Adams was labeled everything in the book during this whole thing by this administration, the Democrats in charge of this daggone state, and called everything but a concerned citizen, if you will. And he stood tall and he stood proud, and this is his payoff. He beat it, and he beat it on behalf of Kentuckians. Go ahead.
Yep, and I would also say that David is, in some Republican circles, he is not highly regarded. And in fact, he's scorned in a lot of Republican circles. But for what it's worth, one guy took the fight to the governor and Obamacare and everything. And this is one of those things that I find aggravating about the Republican Party, is that they would ever even consider any of them would rise to ostracizing somebody like David, because he stood up single-handedly, in a lot of cases put his own money up to do this, and definitely his time and his name. And he fought the fight that a bunch of paid politicians padding their pensions wouldn't take up the fight for. So he did it of his own accord because he believed in it. But a bunch of politicians that would run against Obamacare but would not take up the fight against Obamacare are now like, oh, yeah, great, you know. Like, no, get out.
Well, it's very interesting. It's a very good thing to me. Senate Majority Leader, Republican Damon Thayer, of course, you know, he said it best. He said, apparently Democrats can read polls to show how unpopular Obamacare is with voters. And he's absolutely right. The Democrats were all over this program when it first came out that Beshear was doing this stuff. You know, and all of a sudden they backed off, but they were scared. And according to Thayer, I mean, Damon Thayer pointed out that this whole thing that Beshear did with Connect was never legal, because it required a legislative approval, and it was never granted as per KRS 12.028. So, it's
again,
fantastic.
How hard did any elected Republican fight for that?
I'm totally with you. I'm not saying that Damon Thayer fought for it either.
It's like, oh,
they just allowed
now
David.
Now that he's won, yes, that's right. The governor rammed it through in an unconstitutional fashion, and by God, he sure did. It's like, all right, well, where in the hell were you when he did it? You complained, but not a one of them filed suit like David Adams did.
I agree with you. Oh, I agree with you totally. None of them would. And, you know, that's always the thing. You know, and you talked about David Adams being shunned by a lot of Republicans. If you look at it, that's the mainstream Republicans it's the old guard, if you will. David Adams became shunned when he started running Rand Paul's campaign because the old guard was scared of Rand Paul and didn't want him elected. And it came even worse when Rand Paul actually won in the Senate. Rand Paul got the Senate seat, and they just never forgiven him for allowing that to happen, as much as they like to take credit for Rand Paul now. One quick story before we get into closing comments. You know, it last week you went on a tirade, Ed. I got to give you credit for this Donald Sterling situation with the Los Angeles Clippers. Here's the thing, man. I've got to give you time to even go on worse, because this is even crazier. The NBA is trying to force Sterling to sell his own team. It's a private market team. Now, the NBA says they're going to do this so-called nuclear option. They've got the right to do it. They can force him to sell it. But here's the thing. He actually bought the Clippers back in the 80s for about $12.5 million. $12.5 million with an M, folks. The Clippers today, if they sell, and they're going to be sold, but the Clippers today are going to sell for somewhere around $1 billion. That's with a B, folks. You talk about a hell of a return on your money. But what makes this incredible isn't so much, I'm not even trying to talk so much about the forced sale of the Clippers right now, but what makes this incredible is that Donald Sterling is going to make out like a bandit by them forcing him to sell the team. And here's why. Not only are they going to force him to sell the team and he's going to make $1 billion on a $12 million investment, oh no, because he didn't voluntarily sell the team. Since he was forced to sell the team, it's considered what's called an involuntary conversion. And in California, that means that basically this sale, the forced sale of his team, can be tax-free. So that's $1 billion tax-free, which means that, you know, when you look at lost taxes, $200 million in federal income tax is going to be lost, and you're going to lose another $123 million in California state income tax, both of which are broke and running in the red. So they're going to force him to sell his team. They're going to make him take $1 billion and not pay Uncle Sam a dime. Sounds like a real bad deal, don't it?
Kind of makes you wonder who the smart guy here is, you know, because I've read where he's fighting cancer. Let's face it, he's old, he's married, he has young girlfriends. I mean, this guy's probably looking at, yeah, it's like, and now you, again, I don't want to be the conspiracy theory guy, but what if he hatched the whole plan and said, people are going to hate me. And he's thinking people can hate me all they want for $200 million. I don't care. You know?
Well, you know,
what if he had the whole plan?
Maybe he is smarter than
everybody else. I hate to have to think that way, but I have to think that way now because, you know, I know that when, like, in Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken, it's like if you have property and it's condemned, like the state wants it for a right of way or something, they condemn it. It's a tax-free sale, because, again, it's a forced sale, so I do think that is correct. I haven't looked into that for years. But, I mean, you got to look at the big numbers involved, and you really got to wonder, you know, because he didn't get rich being stupid. I always say that about most rich people didn't get that way from not knowing tax laws and how to play politics and things like that. So now, all of a sudden, I find myself thinking, he may have orchestrated the whole damn thing.
Right. Well, it's not going to be as easy as I'm portraying it. I mean, there are some things that'll have to be, you know, some different things that'll have to be met. But I thought it was a fascinating article by Nick Lum over at the Daily Beast. It showed up on the Yahoo News today. I thought it was a fascinating article, and feasibly, very, very feasibly and realistically, he's going to walk away from this with $1 billion tax free. You know, so how much do you think he cares about a $2.5 million fine to the NBA and no headaches having to worry about these spoiled rich players anymore? I mean, I wouldn't. I'd go ahead and buy me some box seats and just go to the games if I like basketball that much. Who cares? You know what I mean?
Go to the game.
I wouldn't either. I'm just saying, you know, you can't live without it. It's just.
Yeah, he's been banned from it. He can find something else to do. I mean, you know, you start doing the math, you figure at his age, never going to be able to spend it all.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Well, I mean, he can give it to me.
Won't that be something if a handful of years from now he's on his deathbed and just admits, I orchestrated the whole thing?
That would be something for sure. I tell you what, folks, that's it for tonight. We're going to go ahead and get into closing thoughts. Ed Martin, please go ahead.
Well, hey, closing thoughts, you know, while we're on the Clippers thing, I had a little fun with it on the internet the other day. My closing thought is, you know, Dan Johnson, our councilman, who called him, he says he's the man when it comes to this mysterious Russian investor. It was going to buy an NBA team and stuff them in the Yum Center and all that. I'm thinking, Dan, call him now. There's a team going up for sale. I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, it does make you wonder. I have to wonder. You know, these politicians talk the big talk. There's a team hitting the market, and all of a sudden, what do we get from Dan the Man Johnson? Crickets.
Well, you know, I'll follow that for just a second, and I really want to talk about something else. But I tell you, the problem with that is this. You know, we cannot afford an NBA team. We've known that for years. We pointed it out for years. That's why we don't have one. You know, we can barely sustain, you know, what teams we do have playing there in U of L. You know, we can barely cover the cost of the arena now. And the only reason it's being covered is because of the additional money that the city pays into the loans and everything else to make this stay there. The problem is when you spend $1 billion for an NBA team, you've got to have a reasonable expectation and a reasonable amount of time to recoup your investment. $1 billion is so overinflated. We couldn't afford to even bring Charlotte Hornets in here, and they were relatively cheap at about $240 million just a couple of years ago before we opened the center. So I have a major problem with thinking that a $1 billion team is going to move here without some major serious concessions that are going to cost us even more than the $15 to $20 million that it's going to cost us every year out of our Louisville tax money. So that is a big concern to me. And I think Dan Johnson is way off base as usual. And I think anybody that would agree that an NBA team is good for Louisville needs to have their head examined because we simply can't afford it. Now, for my closing thoughts, I come back to David Adams, and folks, I tell you, it is hard sometimes to get motivated. Sometimes you go through these days, and you just don't think you can make a difference. So you don't go vote. You don't get involved. You think one vote or one man can't make a difference. I've been very blessed. I made a difference in the very first case I went after with Jim King here locally. We got the highest fine in Kentucky registration of election finance history. Unfortunately, the Democratic lawmakers at that time refused to prosecute illegal behavior, which I firmly believe and still believe today was the case in the Jim King thing, and that's why the feds are here, and I hope they follow through with what we talked about. But here's the deal. One man made a difference in that case, and I always try to be inspired by others. Not too many people have stepped up to the plate. So then we had another big success that I pursued when I jumped on board and made sure that Judy Green was impeached for her illegal behavior. So I've been blessed. There's been a couple of successes as an individual, and I've done it with no money from anybody. I've done it all on my own. And here's the thing. One thing that we keep coming back to is why aren't more people getting involved? And the reality is most people don't think they can make a difference. If you need to see somebody who's made a difference, a one lone person with the strength of conviction and follow through on what they believe in, that today David Adams is your man. This is somebody else that has went out there and made a difference. He just rocked the whole nation, if you will, because he stopped the national model for the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare. When you see that type of behavior, if you're not inspired that you can make a difference, then there's got to be something wrong with you. That's all there is to it. It's our country, it's our nation, it's our laws, it's our freedom at stake in everything that we do. If we don't get involved, then the only difference we're making is a losing one. Pay attention to those kind of things, folks, so they really do matter. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. Mr. Martin, of course, will be here, correct?
Counting on it.
All right. We do have one note. Thursday night show, TNT Thursday Night Truth with Dale the Truth, will now be TNT Thursday Night Truth with Ed Springsteen this week. Dale will not be able to be here to do his show Thursday, so you're stuck with me all week this week, Monday through Thursday. And don't forget our good friend Ken Molman on Sunday night at 7 o'clock. All shows 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. Have a great night, folks. Ed, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, sir.
All right. Take care, folks.